Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
This episode is also brought to you by Canby Signs and Graphics, creative geniuses, state-of-the-art technology. If you need something printed on anything, visit them today at canbygraphics.com.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
For years, the Canby Area Parks and Recreation District has wanted to shrink. It's a common goal this time of year, what with New Year's resolutions and all that. But Catbird is not looking to lose weight for swimsuit season. They want to shed voters. Catbird is a government entity with elected officers and a long history, but with no permanent source of funding and therefore little in the way of operations or assets. It was originally created in 1964 as the South Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, an obvious counterpart to the North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District. But unlike NCPRD, South Clackamas was never able to pass a permanent property tax to fund parks or programming. Its main business, at least in view of the public over the past six decades, has been changing its name, first to the Blue Heron Recreational District, and now Catbird. Dissolving the district has also been discussed at various times throughout its history, but it's still here. And last week, two of the elected representatives for Catbird, Don Morgan and Andrew Hale, were at the Canby City Council meeting to discuss their latest plans for moving forward. Morgan explained that the district has tried to pass a permanent tax rate at least five or six times. The most recent was in 2011, a proposed 42 cent per $1,000 of assessed value that would also have replaced the levy for the Canby Swim Center that goes before voters for renewal every 5 years. It failed, with over 60% opposed. In hindsight, the timing may have been ill-advised with the nation well into the early stages of a historic downturn. But Morgan said the margins of defeat have been pretty consistent in each election, regardless of economic factors. The issue, he believes, lies with Catbird's boundaries, which mirror those of the Canby School District. The population of that area is some 35,000 souls, twice the size of the city limits of Canby. Though spreading the tax burden over a larger population would mean everyone pays less, the voters in the unincorporated areas have been a stumbling block for the district's attempts to pass the tax base.
I'm thinking it's five or six different elections to try and fund it. Always been shot down pretty much by the same percentage points. People in the county outside the city limits say no. People in the city, pretty much, they're a lot more in favor of it. What it needs then, if this was to pass, is then everybody come together and come up with a real good plan that you could take to the voters to set up to try and get a tax base passed. A little one, you could work whatever, you know, that's the details, but you aren't going to get anywhere, in our opinion, until you reduce the size of the district.
The decision to shrink the district's boundaries ultimately lies with the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners, which oversees Catbird. Morgan said his board approached them with a petition in April, and commissioners encouraged the district to seek the approval of the City Council and Canby Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee first.
We've taken a petition to the county last April,
yeah,
somewhere in that time frame, and met with Martha Schrader and one of the county attorneys and then Jim Bernard, and they would have liked to see a recommendation from the Canby City Council, yeah, along with the Park and Recreation Advisory Board, recommending the shrinkage of the district before they move on.
Counselors seemed interested in the discussion, though no decisions were made last week. Mayor Brian Hodson suggested that they proceed with a work session early next year that included history lessons on Capert's background for the benefit of some of the newer council members.
A 10-acre photovoltaic solar power generation facility, more commonly known as a solar farm or solar park, has been approved on South Spangler Road between Canby and Oregon City. The farm, operated by Buccaneer Creek Solar LLC, will consist of photovoltaic molecules supported by photovoltaic modules supported by stationary pile drives 6 to 10 feet into the ground. The panels will be strung together from east to west and will face south at approximately 25 degree tilts, and will also include perimeter fencing, overhead poles and lines, and internal access roads. The facility will be unmanned with only occasional visits to the site by maintenance personnel. As County Planner Clay Glasgow explained at the hearing back in March, the county has seen a number of these projects at this point, and they tend to be low-maintenance facilities with little impact on neighboring uses or residents.
And this is based, frankly, in large part on the fact that we've done a few of these before. And we've looked at the big hitters. The fact that this is, once it's in place, is essentially inert. It doesn't make any particular noise off-site. It doesn't create dust. We've discussed the glare issue, ad infinitum on that. They just, once they're in place, aside from visually being obvious, they're really quite quiet and peaceful uses. So.
The property is a 44-acre parcel zoned for agricultural and forest use. It currently features a single-family residence and a Christmas tree farm. The project was opposed in writing by one person, Winston Chang, who has also fought other proposed solar farms in Clackamas County, both at the county planning level and in the courts. In this case, he opposed the project on a number of grounds, including the glare from the solar panels would have a negative impact on neighboring properties and that it would be a fire hazard. The county hearings officer Fred Wilson overruled the glare concern after reviewing photos submitted by Chang. He wrote that the allegedly significantly glare does not appear to be very bright, similar to that of a pond. The fire hazard concern was challenged all the way to the State Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA. Chang had argued his petition to LUBA that a high-voltage power facility that is unmanned in the middle of a residential neighborhood inherently increases the fire risk for all residents. He also submitted articles and videos reporting fires on solar farms, including one in the United Kingdom that burned a high-voltage output cable at a control box, and two in California that were reportedly caused by rodents damaging solar power wires. Proponents did not try to argue a solar farm poses no fire risk, but they did say that the risk is significantly less than that posted by existing Christmas tree farms. Trees are, after all, more flammable than concrete and steel. The solar farm comes with a number of spacing and setback requirements and other conditions designed to mitigate fire risk, as well as the construction of internal roads accessible by emergency vehicles, while the tree farm does not. LUBA ultimately affirmed that fires on tree farms are more common, more hazardous, and result in greater damage. According to documents on file with the Oregon Public Utility Commission, Buccaneer Creek Solar has an existing contract to sell power from the facility to Portland General Electric Company. The contract anticipates the facility would generate an average annual output of 3,840,858 kilowatts per hour per year, beginning operations by November 1st, 2020. Road maintenance, and what government entities are or should be responsible for said maintenance, was a topic of some discussion at the last Canby City Council meeting, as councilors unanimously agreed to accept approximately 500 feet of North Maple Street into city jurisdiction. According to a city staff report, county's officials have been getting increasing pressure from Canby residents about needed road improvements to the county-owned portion of North Maple Street, which includes everything north of Northeast Territorial Road, particularly with regard to the substandard width and lack of sidewalks and shoulders. The county had originally approached the city about taking over the entirety of North Maple that's under their jurisdiction, but that was ultimately tabled in favor of a larger discussion about the prioritization of all county road transfers, as Planning Director Brian Brown explained.
There's been a lot of citizen concern about the portion that's county-owned towards Territorial Road. And so they were asking that we take over the entire distance from Territorial North. And rather than do that at this time, there's been more of a concerted effort here recently that Jerry Nelzine and such has been talking with the county to better prioritize citywide what roads do we have, which are most important, and so that we can get a better handle as we move forward in possible future transitions.
City staff had requested that the county provide a dollar sum equivalent to the cost of a two-inch asphalt overlay on the portion of North Maple, which is typical in such transfers. However, the county declined in its instance, citing that this particular portion of roadway is in good condition and is due to be improved by the developers of the 7-acre subdivision, which is recently cleared through the court system after years spent on appeal. The outskirts of North Maple Street being considered in good condition would probably come as a surprise to many of the residents who live there, and it irritated Mayor Brian Hodson, who seemed to channel the dude in saying, "That's just, like, their opinion, man."
Yeah, reading the staff report, Brian, of course, the whole piece about the county not wanting to put any money towards it because, whatever, it's in good shape or whatever. That just is their position still on some of these things, which irritates me to no end, because we're going to have to then figure that out on our end to get that up to snuff at some point along there. So
I didn't want you to be blind to that, so I put it in the report and let you know, but we made our effort.
Nope, I appreciate that. I'd rather that know it now than later, so...
The motion to accept jurisdiction over the soon-to-be-improved 490-foot portion of the roadway at the end of North Maple Street was approved unanimously. A more in-depth discussion is expected next year to review priorities for street maintenance and other transfers from the county, as well as disbursements of revenue anticipated from the new countywide vehicle registration fee.
Canby Cougars football team could be playing in a new special district next year, consisting of 5A powerhouse Wilsonville, along with teams from the Milwaukee, Salem, and Redmond areas, under a tentative proposal by the OSAA. Canby was one of three 6A high schools given the option to move down to the 5A classification based on their winning percentages over the past 2 years, and they were the only one to ultimately decide to go that route. The two that declined were Franklin and Madison, who went 1-8 and 0-8 respectively last season and are both based in Portland. The decision to move down guaranteed what classification Canby would be playing at, but the league was up in the air. That's still the case, but some potential clarity has come in the form of an early proposal by the OSAA Football Ad Hoc Committee. Their tentative proposal would reshuffle the entire 5A class, placing Canby in a new Special District 2 with Wilsonville, LaSalle Preparatory and Rex Putnam from Milwaukee, North Salem and McKay from Salem, and Redmond and Ridgeview from Redmond. The placement with neighboring Wilsonville, a potential athletics rival, was expected. McKay, one of the four 6A teams playing down, along with Forest Grove, South Eugene, and now Canby, went 2-7 last year at the 5A level. Under this proposal, the top four teams in each of the four 5A leagues would qualify for the postseason. Three of the seven teams Canby would share a league with under the current proposal made the playoffs last season. The next meeting of the Football Ad Hoc Advisory Committee will be January 22nd. Questions and comments may be sent to Brad Garrett, the assistant executive director of the OSAA, not the actor, at bradg@osaa.org. The committee's final recommendations will be forwarded to the OSAA Executive Board for review and potential adoption in February.
A Canby Cougar is about to take flight. Senior goalkeeper Haley Adair has signed to play soccer for the Oregon Tech Owls in Klamath Falls next season. It was recently announced. The Owls are coming off of a fantastic 2019 in which they won their first ever Cascade Collegiate Conference regular season championship and finished in the top 25 of the NAIA rankings for the first time in school history. Head coach Brandon Porter was also named CCC Coach of the Year. He said he was pleased with the year's recruiting class, including Haley, calling it a deep group of talent and potential diversity. In addition to her talents on the soccer pitch, Porter said Adair is a great student and person whom he expects to keep the level of competition high among the team's goalies. Haley is a player that we feel adds depth to our goalkeeping crew, he said. She has a great aggressiveness, reactions, and a great get-to-work attitude. Canby women's soccer coach Maria Van Aker said she is so proud of Haley and all of her accomplishments. She has worked so hard over the years to establish herself as an elite goalkeeper and a leader on and off the field, she said. Her passion for the game and her teammates make her a really special player. She's always reaching for new heights, and I'm looking forward to all of her successes at the next level. Haley plans to major in medical imaging at Oregon Tech. She is the daughter of Bridget and Rich Adair.
In other sports news, the Canby Cougars boys basketball team has been on a tear of late, reeling off 5 straight wins in tournament play, including victories over Reynolds, Century, and Glencoe Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, respectively, in the annual Hillsboro tournament. They're 6-4 after a slow start to the season and have just one game this week, a homestand Friday versus visiting McNary, who is 5-2. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. The girls basketball team is 5-2 after splitting their first two games at the West Coast Jamboree in California this weekend. They'll wrap up tourney play Monday against Valencia before returning to the Beaver State for a road game at Sheldon High. The Canby High School wrestling team had an impressive showing at the Larry Owings Invitational 2 weeks ago. The Cougs hosted the annual tournament, which is named after the legendary national champ from Canby High, and were named tournament champions to boot. The tournament included top wrestlers from Beaverton, Churchill, Gresham, Lake Ridge, Lincoln, Sprague, Springfield, West Salem, and Woodburn, as well as Hudson's Bay and Mountain View in Washington. Key performances from the Canby wrestling team included Caden Boyd, first place at 170, Asher Chafee, second place at 126, Dom Netter, second at 138, Ethan Inthred, third place at 113, and Tyler Hensley, third place at 160. Next up will be the Bend invite on January 4th. The Canby Cougars boys and girls swim teams were victorious in a cat fight over the visiting Tigers on December 19th. The Canby boys bested their Three Rivers League rivals 102-66, while the Canby girls won their second meet of the season with a score of 106-64. Top three finishers for the Canby girls included Marin Chard, first in the 100 fly and 100 back, Kylie Hester, first in the 150 freestyle, Avery Kinnanen, first in the 200 and 500 free, and Allison Yancey, who finished first in the 200 individual medley and second in the 100 breaststroke. Canby girls finished first in the 200 relay and 400 free relay. Top three finishers for the Canby boys included Jamison Chard, first in the 100 free and second in the 200, Connor DeRisio, first in the 50 free and second in the 100 fly, and Hunter DeRisio, first in the 200 free and third in the 100 back. The Canby boys also finished first in the 200 medley relay and the 200 free relay. Up next, another Three Rivers League matchup as Canby hosts Lake Ridge on January 9th. For complete results, visit our website, canbynowpod.com/sports.
I am not a golfer. I mean, I'm not a good golfer. So when I want to play a few rounds, I head over to Frontier Golf Course. They're family-owned, family-friendly nine-hole course with beautiful scenery. And they let me rent clubs or bring my own. And they don't judge me for my slices and hacks. Or, you know, my language.
Frontier Golf Course is a great place to meet your buddies and have a drink or bring your kids along. They're located on Holly Street just north of town. If you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
Also, please don't hit the ferry.
Yeah, please don't. But do ask them about Farley the Goat. They love that. Frontier prides itself on being the best value course you'll find in the area. If you haven't been by in a while, you've got to come check out what the new owners have done. Frontier Golf Course, it's a new frontier.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Well, Happy New Year!
Happy New... Wait. It's not new, the New Year yet.
Oh, dang it.
You got
it's close.
Like 2 days left.
Oh, I got excited. 2019 has been... It's been an interesting year.
I'm going to go with better than 2018.
Yeah? What do you base that on?
Kind of where we're at literally right now as we record this.
Yeah. So we're in the studio. It feels emptier than it has been for a while.
A lot.
Yeah, which is, but in a good way, I should
say. Very good.
Because we moved some, we basically just moved stuff from the cramped room into the empty room.
Yeah.
Which is now just, they're a lot more balanced.
Yes.
Yeah, perfectly balanced.
There's still a lot of work to be done, but the work that we have done makes this place so much cooler.
I mean, and mainly the work that you've done is very impressive. I mean, like I was just saying before we started, like this was a boring office. No offense to Equity Oregon. We love you guys, but this was a boring real estate office, and now it's something awesome. We can't wait to, when we're done, we're going to take pictures, video.
Oh, yeah.
Sharing some really cool stuff. But
yeah,
we're just not quite there yet. Got not a little quite. More work to do.
Yeah.
So, but how was 2019 for you other than that?
It's fine. I mean, I just kind of work and podcast and go home and hang out with my wife, and that's my life.
We did. Yeah, so, another Star Wars in the books.
Disney Plus came out.
Disney Plus is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of these great Canby developments.
We got to see the end of the Avengers.
Not really. That's never going to stop.
I mean,
some of the Avengers, I guess.
Back in my day, Thanos was the bad guy.
Well, quite a lot happened in Canby this year.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah. I mean, the Avengers.
The Avengers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Definitely Star Wars.
Star Wars was here. We had Star Wars come through.
So we have an article coming out on our website, a couple of articles looking back at stuff over the past year. And quite a lot happened. I was going to do like top 10, and then I couldn't cut it down, so it's like top 20, and then it even expanded from there. So it's long,
yeah.
But there was a lot that happened this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe this conversation would be just going through a little of that and hitting some of the highlights, and then we've got a huge announcement at the end.
Mm.
Yeah. So exciting.
I forgot what it was already.
But also, we should tell people, we've been in the studio working on basically a new show for 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
It's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be like, you know, Canby Wow podcast, more like.
Please, let's not name it that.
That's what people are gonna say though.
Canby Wow.
That's just organic. That's just what people
say. People are literally gonna be like Canby Wow podcast.
Forget Canby Now, more like Canby Wow. It's gonna be that. Yeah. Maybe I don't know, but we'll workshop it some more. But it is. It's gonna be really cool. We're gonna have a new intro song, some new stuff coming. Olivia Harms is letting us use that song.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
Really excited
I don't
about.
Even like country music, and even I'm excited about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be sweet. So thank you, Olivia, for that. But yeah, okay. I mean, I guess we should tone it down, because some of these stories at the beginning of the year are pretty sad.
Oh,
so do you remember back in January what happened on Barlow Road?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was super sad.
Yeah. Crazy. So kicking off the new year in 2019 was a horrific quadruple murder that happened. Mark Leo Gago basically just had a horrible, horrible episode and ended up attacking his family, his girlfriend, his horrifically his 9-month-old daughter, and his mom and his stepfather. And then when police came, he was strangling his girlfriend's daughter, who was, I think, 8 or 9. I'm trying to find the age. 8-year-old. Deputies took action and opened fire on him and ended up saving her life. So that was sad and horrific and unforgettable.
No, it was really bad. I don't know. It's the first. I found it interesting that we had just started doing the show.
Pretty much. Yeah, like we were about three months in. Yeah.
And then something like that happens where it's like you and I had to sit down and really like go, how do we cover this?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get the information out and still be sensitive to those who are being affected by it?
Yeah. Well, it's always a tough question as a reporter and a journalist, because like you know, people want information, but the main source of information is like the family that you want to leave alone in that in that time,
exactly.
You know. And actually in this case, like for in at least a couple of cases, you know, and eventually they asked for privacy, and I believe the media, you know, respected that, which was great.
Yeah.
But in this case, the family did want, you know, I think they did, one of the TV stations or something, the surviving girl did an interview up in Portland, and, you know, they wanted that story to be told, like, from her perspective. But there are some cases where they're just like, you know, leave us alone. Like, reporters are doing kind of unethical things, in my opinion, you know, dragging them down.
To get the
story. Yeah. So, that was a horrific thing that happened. You know, even more locally here in Cambie, on the heels of that was the death of Austin Peart. So he was an athlete, a baseball player, number 8 for Cambie High, and then went on to Linfield College. And sadly, in early February, he died in a car crash.
Yep.
There were a lot of people that were really, really rocked by that, because he was such a, like a great person, I guess. Like, he had so many people that were, you know, his friends, and people really loved him.
Yeah,
remembered him as a really friendly guy. And then more recently, back in just here in December, their family's neighbors did something really cool where they, like, you know, it happened back in February, but it's the first Christmas without him for that family here in town. So their neighbors got together and got these light up trees from Amazon, not Christmas trees, but like cherry trees. Just to kind of show that they were in their thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool how, you know, you see neighbors coming together and supporting each other when it's really hard. I think that's what this time of the year is all about.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so easy for us to forget and move on to the next
scary
thing.
I was going to say that, like, as a news show, you report the news and you move on. You forget that the family doesn't move on that easily, you know, like, especially like this is our first Christmas without, and this is our first Halloween, you know, whatever, like those milestones hit.
Yeah.
And even 4th and 5th Christmas, like, you know, it doesn't just go away. So, in March, the Cambie Cougar dance team, they won their 5th straight state championship, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So we, in this article and on our website, we have the routine that won that for them up in Portland. And this year, now in just a few months now, they'll be going for their 6th straight, which is just unbelievable.
And to help us with that, we're going to do the dance. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people don't know. You are always dancing when you're on this these things with me.
I'm constantly dancing.
Constantly dance. I mean, right now, what are you doing? The Macarena game?
No, it's a K-pop dance.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm just moving to BTS in my head.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
I'm almost getting choked up. I'm going to move on. let's see. Okay. Let's see if you remember this. This was like...
it seemed like every other story at this point in time, and then we kind of moved on. But the Canby Ferry, do you remember Canby Ferry stuff? You don't remember the...
No.
So this is close to our heart because our very first episode was about the Canby Ferry.
I mean, yeah, I remember that. I remember I gave my unsolicited, uninformed ideas of how we can treat the ferry, but I don't remember after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the county was doing a feasibility study to kind of figure out, should we do a bridge? Should we not do a ferry?
I remember they were like, no, the bridge is kind of...
They ultimately moved on from the bridge because a lot of Canby people didn't want it.
Right.
So right now they're just kind of like, we'll keep doing the ferry and try to do it more cheaply and better. And that's been, kind of the past 8 months. Yeah, it was funny. It was like, we'll just ferry it better. But eventually there's going to be a decision point with that because I don't think they're going to buy a new one when it needs to be replaced. It'd be like $2 million.
Yeah.
And it loses around...
$500,000, isn't it?
$400,000 to $500,000. I mean, it costs $400,000 to $500,000 more. No, well, more than it brings in.
Got it.
So it's okay. Yeah, I don't know if they would call it losing or whatever because it's not designed to make money. You know, you spend money on transportation.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
So then there was a big thing in March and April with the Transgender Day of Visibility Proclamation.
Yep. I remember that.
Yeah.
Where we had to do like a soapbox like every week at that point
we were talking a lot about it. I think at some point you kind of indicated to me you were ready for us to move on to other things.
Well, only because I'm someone who believes that the best way to get over something is to move on, and so I felt like every week if we're bringing it up or if there's something else about it that we can dredge up for it, it's just going to keep the wound fresh, and I don't think that that's necessary. I'm not a newsman. I'm a producer, so I don't. I'm not here to get stuff like that, you know, just to keep listeners. I think that there's plenty going on, and
yeah,
I think people would see it that way. If we kept talking about it over and over and over again, people would be like, "Wow, they're really trying to bleed this stone dry."
Yeah, I think the news was happening. You know, I don't. Think there was anything wrong with our news coverage, but and we kind of stopped doing the soapbox because we're looking at doing something sort of different, new in 2020 anyway. But I think that our place, especially with things like that that are really controversial, is kind of just to be that news point and kind of let people know what's going on and not necessarily like, here's what you should think about it, you know?
Well, I think end of the day, you and I bring an interesting chemistry to it because you know everything about it and I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, interesting is one way to put it. Some of these stories, though, I mean, not necessarily like, this is the hugest thing that's ever happened in Canada, but these were the things that I really built this list out from our most read stories.
Yeah.
So these were the things that people were talking about and were wanting to know about. So.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, a lot happened with splash pads in 2019.
It's still happening with splash pads.
Yeah. So basically, there were a few projects, very interestingly, that, you know, people say government never does anything, but there are a few projects in 2019 that we basically saw go from like...
beginning to... it's still in the progress.
It's still in progress, but it's happening. I mean, it went from like what it had been for maybe over a decade, which was just like, we should do a splash pad sometime, to... actually gonna happen as of Memorial Day of next year. We will have a splash pad. So Columbia Distributing coming to town.
Your favorite thing in the entire world.
The largest, I just think it's really interesting. The largest beverage distributor on the West Coast, fourth largest in the nation. Columbia Distributing now having its brand new Portland area facility in Canby, 531,000 square feet. Out there in the industrial park. Another big thing was the Quiet Zone.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're in downtown Canby now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a thing. We do a recording studio.
In downtown
Canby.
So you can just go ahead and assume where we stand on.
Right, exactly.
Or at least me. Maybe not Frankie, but definitely me.
I assume.
against the Quiet Zone. If I don't have one train in every recording I do, it's not made in Cambie.
Another project that was like had been talked about for probably 20 years. Went from 2019 to we're going to really look at this to it's almost certainly going to start next year.
Yeah, it's crazy how all this stuff was just kind of in, you know, sitting on the sideline until we started our podcast.
I know. I mean, just throwing not that we there. Should take credit for no, it, but definitely not, it but, is all you know. Thanks to us. So anyway, do you recall this one? This was big news for a little while. The Cambie High School marching band back in
June. Where they missed the bus, didn't get them to the finals or something. And then they just stood out in the parking lot and did their routine or something like that.
You're just laser focusing on the saddest part of that story.
Yeah. Well, and then
they were supposed to perform in the Starlight Parade of the Rose Festival.
That's what it was.
And they were really excited. They had been practicing for weeks and weeks to go to Portland and perform. And the buses, there were some miscommunication, some paperwork that didn't get filed in the right way or at the right time. Buses never showed up.
Yeah.
So, and at that point, it's like 100 students. So the parents and everything were already on their way to Portland so they could watch it.
Yeah.
There's no way to like just magically move 100 kids
all these children
and all their instruments. It was a crazy, sad thing. So they missed it. And like you're talking about, they ended up doing their, because they've been practicing, they ended up doing their song and they're marching just around the basically empty parking lot.
Yeah.
And that was sad, but the Rose Festival organizers found out about it. And within 24 hours, they were like, we're going to get you into the Grand Floral Parade, which is the like grand finale.
Yeah.
And even a bigger stage and bigger audience. So they got to perform in that.
That's
ended
awesome.
Up being one of the top awarded bands recognized from that. So
that's right. They were.
Yeah.
Darn
Cambie
right. Band.
Cambie Marching Band. There was a shooting at the end of that month in June. At Village on the Locks. Do you remember this? The guy having a mental health episode.
I don't remember that one.
So there was a gentleman who lived in that area. He was having what police described as a mental health crisis on June 30th. Ended up somehow had a firearm and fired some shots. At least one shot went in the direction of police.
A police officer. I remember that one.
Which intent or whatnot, you know, he said he was saying some things like he didn't believe they were really police and stuff. He was having an episode, but because of the shot going toward police, you know, he ended up getting charged with attempted murder aggravated because it was a police officer. He's still facing those charges as of now. So, and unlawful use of a weapon and menacing. Another Columbia-related story, Columbia Helicopters. We were really like the only people that have been covering. This is a big story to me. So Columbia Helicopters and Aurora, like one of the biggest companies in Aurora, one of the biggest success stories from Aurora Airport. They're like a huge, like global company. Was sold. They tried to sell it twice. Do you remember?
Yeah, the first time it fell through.
Fell through. It was like a $560 million deal.
And someone said it was like one of the biggest catastrophes or something
ever, right? So the chairperson, or one of the shareholders, I mean, of the company where it fell through was kind of blaming it on the CFO of the company, saying it was horribly botched.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, horribly botched. Like, way to throw someone under the bus, dude.
Yeah.
If you and I were to use that phrase for anything that we do for this show, the other person would be like,
"Wow, that's really mean."
Okay, sorry, everyone.
That we
put that wrong episode out. It was horribly botched.
It was kind of interesting to watch because the first deal, like they did this big press release, they were like, "This is how much we're paying," and this is like it was like all these details that you don't normally get with these big deals, even ones that are public companies, of which Aurora wasn't at the time, or Columbia wasn't at the time. But, and then it fell through.
Yeah.
And then the next deal that ended up going through with this company, AE Industrial Partners from Florida, they were like very tight-lipped about it. So, I mean, they did press release and stuff, but they didn't reveal like the financial details and things like that. So maybe a little wisdom in that. If you're ever doing a, you know, $600 or $700 million deal, maybe
be a little quieter.
Little case study there for you. So another story from Village on the Locks. Do you remember the dog?
The dog that got stuck.
He got stuck on this like 75 feet down on this steep hillside, covered in brambles and poison oak and all this stuff.
It took like like a lot of people to get him up, right?
Well, it took this amazing group called the Oregon Humane Society Emergency Annual Rescue Team, also called OSTAR, that are like trained for these extreme.
I just imagine the beginning of like a Japanese Power Rangers style, yeah. Like, we've got the call. Let's go. And yeah. Each one has a color.
They're gearing up. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah. They all fly a different falcon-shaped jet, mm-hmm. and then they put it together to make one giant robot to right. pick the dog up.
Right. The dog's like horrified.
Oh, Star, go.
Yeah, I mean, that you
please,
nailed it.
Please, if we can ever find an animator, can we please write an O-Star cartoon?
Yeah. That was one of my favorite stories, though. That was fun. Virginia Krakowiak, who rappelled down to rescue the dog. Like, she's, like, walking, like, 12 feet up in the air, but just because there's so much brambles and yeah. stuff underneath her.
Yeah.
And just really incredibly brave and, you know, rescuing this animal that the owner ended up coming the next day to get. So
that's so cool.
And investing in a dog tag, she said. So, in a microchip.
Yeah.
Okay. It's more fun stories. Isabella Berge, the best girl shooter in the country from right here in Canby.
Yeah.
Was one of only 7 out of 1,700 competitors at the USA Clay Target High School National Championships to score a perfect 100 out of 100. And she's just really cool as well. So I've interviewed
her a couple
times. What
are those booms? The greatest shooter in the country.
Well, girl, female shooter, but yeah.
What are those booms? The greatest female shooter in the country.
Nailed it. Speaking of booms, you knew this was going to come up.
Oh, yeah, the booms. Oh, my goodness. How was this a bigger argument than some of these other things that we have gotten into?
I mean, I'm not going to touch that one, but I did struggle with putting the fireworks on here because nothing actually happened. Like, right. No news actually happened because
it was just conversation. We were just covering the conversations.
No,
that were happening.
I mean, the Canby School District did announce they weren't going to do the fireworks. And that's what really
set off
the, you know what, storm.
Right.
Firestorm, yes. Obviously. Right. And and then they reversed themselves. So, I mean, things did change, but ultimately we were right back where we would have otherwise been.
Yeah.
It's just people were more upset than they were.
They're now more aware of it.
Yeah, of that things could change. And potentially, I don't think we've heard the last of this story. I don't think we've heard the last of Paul Yelvisaker.
Fireworks, too. Yeah. This time it's personal.
Right. So high speed chase.
Yeah. And we had a couple of those.
September. Well, this was a big one. It was a stolen rental truck, a budget rental truck that, had been connected with, some thefts of trailers and gasoline in Canby. Police noticed it. They were doing like a pedestrian enforcement.
Yeah.
And they noticed a truck, started the pursuit. It wound all the way through Canby, Oregon City, through 99, eventually going on to 205. The crazy thing was there was like 6 different times that they tried to use spike strips to stop the truck. And it wasn't until the 6th time that they finally, like, they had like partially punctured a tire here or there, but finally got all of them. And then they did like a special maneuver where they like, and the truck ended up flipping.
The pit maneuver?
The pit maneuver. You remember that. I'm so proud of you.
I just know the pit maneuver.
Oh, you don't remember it from the story.
No, I just know about it.
You're just a big NASCAR fan.
No, it's a cool idea. Mm-hmm. I also know about it because I watched a video where they were talking about putting nets onto the front of police cruisers.
Okay.
So that they could shoot it out like a Batman thing. And then like it tangles up in the front car, in the wheels of the other car.
Yeah. No, that's what happened here.
Did that for real happen? They shot a net?
No, not at all.
Okay. Because I was about to lose my mind.
No, they just... They
pitted it.
They hit it at a certain angle that makes it...
It makes it...
either
jackknife
flip or jackknife, Yeah, in this case, rollover, but because it's a big boxy
truck. It's a big truck,
Boxy truck. In October, we're almost to the end. If people are hating this, we're getting there. I like it. I like looking over what's happened. Wayward sandwiches, I think, was a big story, and was one of our most read.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't been there. I know. I think about it there, like, literally every time I come into the studio to work on
you
our
need
show.
To go. Yeah.
I think I'll do it in 2020.
Well, I mean, you've only got like a couple more days to not do it in 2020.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So hopefully, that could be your resolution.
to go to Wayward Sandwiches once I start my keto diet to go have a sandwich.
I think they have, they could just take the bread off, right?
Yeah, but what's the point of a sandwich if you don't have the bread?
Well, they have really good meat.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, you have good luck with those lettuce wraps, I know, at local restaurants. You've had really good luck with that. So, yeah, they were the first commercial business going to the Dahlia, and they're awesome. If you haven't checked them out, Tyler, definitely go check them out.
Definitely go check them out.
Really good food. Canby football was a big story this year, all throughout. So the new coach, Jimmy Joyce, was hired. Pretty soon after that, he announced he was doing away with the wing T formation, which had been Canby's standard offensive formation for about 40 years.
Yeah.
You can't really be more associated with an offense than Canby was with the wing T. They lost their first 7 games, and I know like there was a lot of excitement behind Jimmy Joyce. I know that that was a struggle, and we actually have a conversation coming up next week with the coach and one of the players, kind of discussing the season and looking back. But it was tough. Like, you know, they came really close to breaking
like
that losing
streak.
Like
every game, they were like almost there.
There were a few that were rough, but they were competing in a lot of the games. So they were much better than you might know if you only looked at their record and the wins loss. Then won the last 2, and then some big news right at the end of the year that they're moving down to 5A. So, and we had a story at the top of the show talking about that. Canby volleyball that same fall season, they were the best public school volleyball team in the state. So
nice.
They finished 3rd, but the 2 teams ahead of them were both private schools, so they don't even really
count.
They don't really count. They had a crazy run in the tournament. They came in seeded 11. They swept the 22 seed Grant in the opening round, which is what you would expect. I mean, that was the only one that was maybe not surprising. But then they upset the 6th-ranked team Sprague, and then a stunning victory in the next round over Mountainside, which was the 3rd-ranked team in the state. They fell behind 2-0. You win with 3. Right? 3 out of 5?
Yeah.
You know volleyball really well.
Totally.
So you
I'm following
you,
all of this.
You need 3 sets to win. They fell behind 2-0.
Okay.
And then they won the next 3.
Of course they did.
And beat, so pretty incredible.
They needed to make the other team feel like they did a good
job
before they destroyed them.
It was just like they were just playing the script of like every sports movie.
Yeah,
so.
It's a classic move.
Yeah. And this is our last one. Other than our big announcement, was the Canby School Board this month, just a couple weeks ago, actually, approving the agreement between the district and the union, averting a possible teacher strike after like 6 or 7 months of collective bargaining. They came to an agreement on cost of living adjustments of 3% for this year and 4% for next year, both marks being the highest increase that teachers have seen since 2011.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool.
Nice.
So we have a big announcement.
Yes.
Are you excited about this?
I'm so excited. I've literally just been waiting for this.
As of like yesterday when I told you we were doing it.
Yeah, I feel like I've been waiting for a year as you reviewed our year.
So in reviewing the year, I just had the thought that it would be cool, and maybe we'll do a lot more with this next year, you know. This was kind of a little more of a last minute thing, I think it's certainly deserving. We wanted to name a person of the year for Canby.
Yeah.
And
thank you so much. But no, I'm not a candidate for this. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what you're thinking. Tyler Clausen, producer of Canby Now Podcast. Obviously I'm the number one choice, but to make it fair,
we ended up not doing that.
Yeah.
No, it was hard. I mean, I had to change
the
name
list after
multiple
list,
times.
You're like every single time.
It keeps
Tyler
coming up,
Clausen.
Tyler. Yeah. I know. I finally just had to take you off the board. But and looking back over the year, there were a lot of people that I think were movers and shakers this year and did a lot of good work in Canby. But I wanted to, and we talked about it and decided to name Ellie Shorter.
Ellie Shorter, come on down. That
because of her, you know, I don't want, if we do this again next year and whatever we do with it, I don't want it to just be like the most talked about politician or whatever, you know, because that would be easy and that would be maybe the more standard news thing to do. But Ellie, you know, I've interviewed her a couple times. She's just
And if you don't know her story, the junior soccer captain who has been battling cancer, mm-hmm. we've got a couple stories on our website, recent stories to check out, including this one naming her. But just the courage and grace that she has shown, and I'm just a huge sap, but it's literally like brought tears to my eyes. Yeah, like talking to her, hearing the things that she says to people and the impact that she's had on lots of other people as well.
Yeah.
I think, and the fundraising that's been done to support her and her family has really made a huge impact. Yeah. And I think been really inspiring and really, to me, just been one of the best stories of 2019, best Canby stories of 2019. So we wanted to recognize that and really maybe even encourage more of that, you know, more people to be open and courageous as Ellie was in sharing her struggle and her story and what she's going through and inspiring people through that. So
absolutely. I think that everything that she stands for is to inspire people. So if this is just another way to do that, it's probably going to work.
Yeah. So thank you, Ellie. Thank you, everyone, for a really cool, really fun 2019.
Yeah, seriously, thank you so much for sticking around with us as we, you know, kind of move our location and get some more people involved and really stretch ourselves as podcasters and news people. And I couldn't thank you enough for hanging out with us for all of 2019.
Yeah, yeah, and get ready for Canby Wow.
Canby Wow.
It's coming. Okay, we got one more thing. We're gonna take a quick break and then bring you something cool coming to Canby next year.
Here we go.
And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we'd love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Joining us on the line now is Brandon Creason. He's the president of Kitty Hawk Products, which is a Garden Grove, California-based company, but is also the newest member of the Canby Industrial Park. They're opening a location there. I've been working on that facility for a long time. And they are a pioneer in the process of hot isostatic pressing. Is that all right, Brandon?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. My first question is, what is that?
You know, it's funny. We get that question quite a bit.
I'm sure you do.
And essentially, hot isostatic pressing, in the most layman sense, is a metal densification process. And what we're doing is removing internal porosity in metal and mm-hmm. improving mechanical properties. So again, this is the first step in a post-manufacturing chain. Mm-hmm. After our process, parts go to heat treat to get back to condition, onto machining, and then the final end user or customer.
Okay, so follow-up question. Can you make me Captain America's shield?
You know, so that's funny. Again, people think that we manufacture or we make something, and we don't. So we're service-based only.
Okay.
So we will take parts that our customers have already made in the raw form, and then they will send it to us for us to do our process. And as you mentioned, it's hot isostatic pressing. And again, so we will do our process onto their part, right? And then what we will do is after our process, we'll essentially ship it back to the customer.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, with our process and the metal manufacturing process, you're only going to want to send me your parts if it's a high value part. Mm-hmm. You see some high heat, high wear. We're essentially an insurance policy to make sure you have a longer lasting or durable part.
Okay. Cool. And I've been teasing you a little bit, but essentially your process in layman's terms, again, takes the product, whatever it is, and makes it better. It kind of removes impurities. It makes it stronger and just work better in, you know, the ultimate application that it's used for.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, initially when this process came out in the early 70s, mid 70s, if you will, it was more of a salvage process for metal castings only. I can tell you that castings are still the bread and butter of the hot isostatic pressing world.
Okay.
But since then, there's been other manufacturing processes that have really come to the forefront, like additive manufacturing and 3D printed metal, metal injection mold, near net shape, powdered metal parts, but really with castings, you have a repeatable part in the hundreds of thousands. And inherently with castings, when they're made, you have these voids or porosity underneath the surface. And that's what our process really helps to do, is remove those voids or porosity. And again, give yourself a more durable or longer lasting part.
And porosity, I believe, is the amount of piranhas that are in the metal. Is that right?
That's one way of putting it, yes. I actually like that term.
Yeah, sometimes I have a good one here and there. So what types of industries do you guys serve? I know it's quite all across the board.
Yeah, it's across the board. Aerospace is the big one. And then we also do firearms, we do oil and gas, medical implants, and commercial product.
Okay.
So really, it's a wide variety of industries. But again, when this specific process came out in the 70s, it was for only aerospace. But then as the years went on, other industries could really see the value in the process. Mm-hmm. And so it's been applied to different industries.
Yeah. So firearms, like handguns, because that's kind of interesting that it's like so big potentially in terms of working in aerospace applications, and then also like really small kind of fine parts as well.
Yeah, so it could be barrels on a handgun. It could be locking blocks or triggers, which would be small components. Anything that's going to see high heat or high wear, you're going to want to make sure you have a fully dense part that can handle that type of heat or wear over a long period of time. Mm-hmm.
Did you say automotives?
Yeah, so automotive too. Sorry if I left that one out.
Yeah.
So automotive is a big one too. We do cylinder heads for aftermarket automotive. We also do small automotive components in the metal injection mold type of manufacturing process. But again, automotive is fairly new, especially with Kitty Hawk products, I should say. We've done some automotive parts in the past, but really we're scratching the surface in that industry and what we can really provide.
Cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the move to Canby and kind of what led into that. You, as I mentioned, are based in, I believe, ever since you guys started out, which was, you know, 1981, quite a bit of time at this point, have always been in that Southern California area outside of Los Angeles, and now coming into the Pacific Northwest. And kind of tell us how you landed on little Canby, Oregon.
Yeah, so the company was founded in 1981, you're correct. And we didn't talk about this earlier, but we are a family business. We are owned by six siblings, all female.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
And so we obviously have some customers in the Pacific Northwest. I can tell you in the last 10 or 15 years, there's always been discussion about making the move to the Pacific Northwest. Mm. The timing wasn't right, but here we are in 2019, soon to be 2020, and the timing is right for us. So we decided to make the move. And how we stumbled upon Canby, and I'll be honest with you, we were looking all the way from Portland, Oregon, down to the valley. Mm. And, you know, during that process and our due diligence, we stumbled upon Canby that had the perfect size building that we wanted in terms of building height, square footage, a local community that would be welcoming of new business. And that's kind of how it happened. But again, coming from Southern California, you know, buildings are like a dime a dozen, right, in terms of what your needs are.
Yeah.
But what we found in Oregon is that what we needed, it was a little bit harder to find. And so that's how we found this one building in Canby. And I'll tell you, I couldn't be happier with the decision, because the folks in the city have been very welcoming, not only to our business, but just to our staff.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, every time I go up there for business, you know, there's just something that grabs me about the community each time. So it's been a great experience.
Cool. Can you elaborate on that at all? Sort of anything specific that you've seen in Canby that really stands out as far as telling you a little bit about who we are up here?
Yeah, so specifically, I would say it's just the way that people treat other people up there. You know, coming from Southern California, it's the melting pot, right?
People didn't know you were from California. That's the thing.
Yeah, you know, and then once you tell them they're from California, they stop talking to you. No, I'm kidding. Right. No, it's just people are very genuine in the Oregon area, specifically Canby. Mm-hmm. And you can see that with it, you know, if it's just normal people in the community or it's vendors that you work with, it's just a different level of not only doing business, but just meeting new people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems like it's a real genuine group. And like I said, you know, I see that each time I go up there.
Mm, that's awesome. So glad that that's been your experience. I think it's interesting with the Canby question because, it seems pretty clear, like for the most part, it wasn't sort of like we're going to Canby because that's where all of our customers are. I mean, we don't have a ton of aerospace manufacturers and whatnot out here, yeah. But really just the location. I mean, that's ultimately the biggest factor in real estate decisions, but also the yep. kind of business environment that really drew you here.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, you're about, 15, 20 miles from Portland. Mm-hmm. We are probably about 35, 40 miles from some of our largest customers. Mm-hmm. We're really nicely situated in Canby, so we don't really have an issue in terms of going to the city or going down to our customers. And we have a little bit better of a draw in terms of looking for employees or new hires, mm-hmm. Being closer to the Portland area.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about the building and the process of standing that up. I understand that you guys have been working out there for months. You had to install the first, HIP, hot isostatic pressing unit, which is, we've talked just a little bit about the process, not necessarily exactly what the units are, but that's no small feat. I mean, these are large, large machines. Is that right? They're like 4,000 square feet or something.
Yeah. So it is a very large HIP vessel. But I'll tell you, the building itself is a 27,000 square foot building. When we were doing our homework, we essentially didn't have time to start to build and go through the planning process and build a brand new building. So again, we were searching for an already established building, mm-hmm. and we found one in Canby. It's 27,000 square feet, excuse me. And it had the building height that we needed because we have to use overhead cranes and we're lifting heavy parts. Yeah, so that was a big, yep. So yeah. That was a big part of it. So the actual HIP vessel itself, you know, you're talking about a vessel that's 150,000 pounds of steel, right?
Wow.
And it essentially it's a giant metal forging that was made in Italy. And so that takes close to about 6 to 8 months to make. And then it was shipped from Italy all the way over to Seattle and then trucked down from Seattle to Canby. And that process is pretty neat in terms of us getting it off the truck.
Oh, yeah. I love this. I've seen photos of that.
Yes, and into a pit that's about 20 feet deep. So okay. I actually have a video of that I could send you.
Oh, please do. Yeah, we'll share it with folks if we can.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about a large hunk of metal, if you will,
yeah.
going into the ground. Yeah. So.
Cool. And you have plans to, because, I mean, you know, about 4,000 square feet for this unit, but the building itself is much larger than that. I believe that there's plans to ultimately look at expanding that out to multiple presses. I think you have 6 down in Garden Grove.
Yeah, so for us, I mean, when you're doing your business plan, you're planning not only for tomorrow, but you're planning for, you know, beyond the future, right? And so that's the reason why we went for a 27,000 square foot building is, you know, we're planning for more HIP vessels and future growth. But, you know, the one HIP vessel that we purchased, it went into a pit that can actually house 2 HIP vessels.
Oh, cool.
So we've already planned for the immediate future. And I'll tell you, we received approval from our board of directors to move a vessel from our Garden Grove facility in March up to Canby. So fairly quickly, we're going to have 2 HIP vessels.
Oh, wow.
That will be available to our customers up there.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you can share specific dollar figures or things of, how much these these things, these units, these presses, vessels, as you call them, cost. But I just do want to give you an opportunity. I mean, this investment that you guys are making in our community is quite sizable, and we certainly, you know, appreciate that and appreciate that you wound up here in our little neck of the woods.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I won't give you exact dollars, but it's in the millions.
Yeah.
So the vessels themselves are quite expensive. And then you can imagine, you know, buying a piece of property and a building, right, what that costs. But
sure,
we're making significant capital investment. Like I said, not only with the actual equipment, but the building, but infrastructure itself. And then most importantly is people, right? Mm-hmm. You need people to actually, you know, operate the business and train them. Yeah,
so they can use these very, you know, expensive investments in a safe and responsible way.
Right, right. So, you know, it's, you know, cause coming from a business that's a family business, it's a significant capital investment. But like I said, we're excited about it. We're excited to be in Canby. And, you know, we're excited to immerse ourselves in the community and pretty soon start to hire local talent.
Mm. Cool. So yeah, let's we're going to wrap things up here. But in terms of that, is there any information you want to share for folks that might be interested in that, the hiring aspect, or just anything else you'd like to share with our local listeners?
Yeah, you know, for potential customers, you can visit our website. It's kittyhawkinc.com. That's KittyHawkInc.com if you want to learn more about the service. And for any employees who would like to possibly interview for positions, they could visit our website as well, or they can call our local numbers that are listed on the website.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Brandon, again, for this investment you're making in our community. And thanks for your time and telling us about it and explaining it and being patient with my Captain America comments.
Tyler, thank you for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure. If anyone in the community ever wants to stop by, you're more than welcome. If I won't be there, my local staff will be, and they'd be happy to help you out in any way we can.
Cool. Sounds great. Thanks, Brandon.
No problem. Thanks, Tyler.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah?
Can you do me a favor? Just real quick, name all the services that you're subscribed to.
Okay. Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. There's like Google stuff, I think. My wife, I think, does a cat thing, and I'm looking into Dollar Shave Club.
It's starting to get a little ridiculous, right? There's even an app to manage all of your subscriptions now. Of course, it comes with its own monthly convenience fee. It can get a little overwhelming. They've even coined a term for it, subscription fatigue.
If you're being hit with subscription fatigue blues, we have a solution for you, at least when it comes to streaming options. Try Easy Video TV from Direct Link. It offers your favorite shows and movies all in one app on the same bill as your internet service.
Direct Link is a local community-based provider that has your back. Record your favorite shows, watch them anywhere, and access all the major local and cable TV networks with an Easy Video subscription.
Why are we still sitting here? How do I sign up? Let's go!
Well, it's easy. Just call DirectLink at 503-266-8111, visit their office at Juniper and 2nd, or go to directlink.coop to switch to Easy Video TV today. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love. For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Can Be Now podcast, visit canbenowpod.com/plus.